Yes? Okay, good. All right, let's go ahead and get into Exodus 5. I think Gary Witt had a stent put in so he wouldn't do the class. Because he'd volunteered, and then Thursday I get a call, said, would you volunteer? So I said, okay. All right. I find it rather interesting in the account of Exodus in the Old Testament, does it mention the name of the Pharaoh? Since Moses was the author, he certainly knew who he was. So why didn't he name him? Anybody got any ideas? In short, I believe that Pharaoh's name is not mentioned on purpose. Throughout the Exodus narrative, the Pharaoh either implies or asks, who is the Lord that I must obey his voice and let Israel go? I know not the Lord, nor will I let Israel go. And that's Exodus 5:2. The irony, perhaps, intentionally, is that we don't know Pharaoh's name, but we know the Lord's name. Yahweh or I Am. The book of Exodus was not written to exalt Pharaoh, but to exalt God. Pharaoh considered himself the divine king in his own mind. But rather, the God of Israel. Okay, now, as a representative of the Hebrews, Aaron and Moses went to ask for audience to see Pharaoh. And since Moses had been in the court of Pharaoh for the first 40 years of his life, he knew how to go about doing that. I guess there were some procedures you had to do, some things you had to do, but he knew what to do. And since they were representatives of the Israelites, they were entitled to do this. And as we're going to hear fairly often here, let my people go. With this command from Israel's Lord in the confrontation between Pharaoh and Moses and between Pharaoh and God had begun. It was a command that Pharaoh would hear often in the days leading up to the Exodus. Let my people go. Pharaoh's response to Moses and Aaron's humble request would read more as contempt than ignorance. Pharaoh's response to Moses and Aaron is very clear and sets the tone for the whole Exodus account. Here we see Moses and Aaron going before Pharaoh boldly. We can learn a lesson from this. We must be bold in the Lord. We must not back down from telling the truth because of a person's situation in life. We must learn to be bold and bring the message of God. When Moses and Aaron gave the message to Pharaoh, they were explicit with him of what God this was. In a land where there were many gods, this was a very important thing to do. God was specific in his request of what he wanted from Pharaoh. Let my people go. Now, what's strange about this, it took a famine to get them into Egypt. If it wouldn't have been for the famine, they wouldn't have went to Egypt. But now it takes the slavery and punishment to get them out. They didn't even want to go then. But if this wouldn't have happened, they would have been content to stay. We must not look back down from telling the truth. Okay, I don't have that. In a land where there was many gods and false gods, it was important for things to do. God was specific in his request of what he wanted from Pharaoh. Let my people go. In all likeliness, Pharaoh knew Israel's God, but he arrogantly rejected him as having any power over him of any demands that he requested. Pharaoh was probably not completely ignorant because they had been there 430 years. He's bound to heard Jehovah, Yahweh, or I Am somewhere in those 430 years. His name would certainly have been used by the Israelites in the presence of Egyptians. More likely, he refused to recognize the name of Yahweh or request brought in that name because he did not recognize Yahweh's authority over him for such a demand. And therefore, he says he would not obey. Thus, he was really in a confrontation between God, the gods, Yahweh and Pharaoh. Pharaoh indicates that he did not recognize Yahweh's authority. As a result, needless to say, he was never saved. Isaiah 45, 4 and 5, "For the sake of Jacob, my servant, of Israel, my chosen, I summon you by name and bestow on you the title of honor. Though you do not acknowledge me, I am the Lord and there is no other. Apart from me, there is no God. I will strengthen you, though you have not acknowledged me." In a technical sense here, he's referring to Egypt's future conversion. And that's in Isaiah 19, 21. "And the Lord shall be known in Egypt, and the Egyptians shall know the Lord in that day, and shall do sacrifice and obligations. Yea, they shall vow a vow unto the Lord and perform it." Someday the Egyptians will submit to Yahweh and his authority and obey him. It became Yahweh's sole purpose throughout the rest of the encounter with Pharaoh that he and his people would know Yahweh, at least in the sense of submitting and letting his people go. Eventually, Egypt will begin to know Yahweh. This Lord God has spoken of as Jehovah when Moses came back to Egypt after the encounter with God at the burning bush. And Pharaoh thought of himself as a god, but really didn't obey even the false gods. So why would he obey one of the gods of the Hebrews? Even if Pharaoh was sure this was the real God, he probably wouldn't go to him because he was too proud of the power he had, and it was unlikely he would give it up to anyone. As a follow-up to Pharaoh's rejection, the spokesman rephrased more specifically with a request together of a warning, possibly divine judgment upon Israel from the failure to obey God. Pharaoh saw this simply as a trick to reduce the workload of his slave workforce. In a ruler's regard for the Lord's command, the Lord would begin pestilence and death on the Egyptians so that there would be no doubt regarding the answer. Moses knew all too well what would happen if he didn't obey the Lord's command. Probably there was reason that these plagues were mentioned here, so Pharaoh would be aware that these plagues were from God. If these plagues came upon the Hebrews, they would surely come upon the Egyptians as well. These words were not addressed to Moses and Aaron, but to the other Israelites and the elders who went with Moses and Aaron and several others who followed just to see how things came out, impatient to see what would happen. We see here that one of the reasons why Pharaoh did not do this was because he didn't want to lose 3 days' labor from the vast workforce of the Hebrews. Then Pharaoh told Moses and Aaron to get back to work themselves. So if some workers were to be taken off, as suggested, there was sure enough people to work. But the idea of letting someone go was that if I let them go this time, they're going to want to go again. And they're probably going to want to go again. And then I'm going to have to round them up, suppress them again. So I really didn't want to go through all this, so I'm not letting you go. And he goes on to say, "Make ye them rest upon their burden, which was a way to make them more numerous still and frustrate the design of laying burdens upon them, which was originally designed to hinder the multiplication. And that's Exodus 1:9. He thought if he put enough burden on them, made them work enough, that they'd be too tired to go home and raise a family. He was wrong. We see many times in history where great men, by the world standards, come against the people of God and make it very difficult for the ministry of God to perform the task asked upon them. Moses and Aaron might as well have been talking to the wind. Pharaoh was not about to let the people go at this point. These people said, showing his authority to give orders to Israel, Pharaoh immediately increased their workload and severity of their bondage by and let them at their own regard. That's verse 9, that he made them get their own straw. Before the straw was provided for them, and let's see here, Pharaoh's decree meant the Hebrews had to gather their own straw to make their own brick. They had to do it after work, and they had to do it before work. And any brick that wasn't made, if they had a quota to make, if they didn't make the quota, someone would pay. Now, what I was did some reading here, and I found out that not everybody worked in the brickyards all the time. They had a life besides this, and what they did is they took care of their flocks, took care of their herds, took care of their property, went hunting, went fishing, had a life. But that life, some of that life was taken away. And I want to break it down and tell you that not everybody worked in the brickyards all the time. Now, what they had is they had certain gangs. They probably had two or 300 people in a gang. And let's say they had 12 gangs, you know. Okay, gang one, okay, you're working from, you know, January to February, okay? You're working that amount of time, okay? I expect X amount of bricks from you at that time. Said, and there was three levels, okay? There were superintendents, there were foremen, there were clerks, and there were actual people making bricks. So when the bricks weren't made, if the right amount of bricks weren't made, who do you think they whipped first? They didn't whip the bottom person first. They whipped the superintendent first. How many times have you heard that happen? They started at the top. They whipped the superintendent. Then the superintendent had the next guy whipped. Then it went on down the line. That's not good, Amalasa. So, I mean, you know, so you're usually the bottom man's the only one that gets the burden on him. But right here, they put burden on everybody. Now, after that certain amount of months was over with, those guys went, took care of their life, and number two came in, and they did the work. So it wasn't somebody spending the whole time making bricks. So the more I read that, I said, I need to really clarify that, because it really doesn't tell you that. Okay, the Pharaoh wanted the people to know that he did not appreciate the request from Moses and Aaron. He didn't like it at all. So exact extra work as punishment. The taskmakers were the officers close to Pharaoh who would carry out the Pharaoh's orders. They got whipped first. The straw was chopped up and used as bulk into making brick. The jobs of getting the straw to make the brick for a full day's work was required in the extra hours. The punishment inflicted on Pharaoh would be determined by the future request of Moses and Aaron on their behalf. Demanding them to make and bring in the same number of bricks they used to do when the straw was brought to them and given, And by this, it appeared a daily task for a certain number of brick. You shall not diminish aught therefore, not make any reduction in the number of bricks, is a consideration of loss of time, and their labor would fetch straw from other places. And I'm going to go through the process of the Egyptians making the bricks. In Egypt, they have very, very little rain. They probably have 2 or 3 inches a year. You know, you stretch 2 or 3 inches of rain over 365 days, you know, said, Gillis got 4 inches of rain today. That'd have been a whole year in Egypt. You know, so. Okay, and so the absence of rain and the scarcity of wood. You know, said, you can't make very many things out of a palm tree. You know, and abundance of sunshine made the adobe preference building material. You know, years ago, when I was in college, I kind of worked as selling brick. I didn't do a real good job of it. But one day we're talking, my boss told me, and we were talking about adobe brick, and he said, get a cup of water. So we got a cup of water, and we walked out to the adobe brick, and he's talking to me, and the whole time he's talking to me, he's pouring this water on his brick. And I'm watching him, and not a drop of water hit the ground. And that brick absorbed all that water. You know, so water's not good for sandy and clay brick. The main material to create the houses were the bricks. And the bricks were made from the soil from the Nile River. The soil, like we talked about earlier, about a month ago, was black volcanic ash that had came down the river from way up, I'm not going to say up north, it's down south, because the Nile River goes north instead of south. When it dried, it was as hard as stone. The Nile mud, the fertile soil, and the clay mixed with straw resulted in a surprising strong brick. A sun-dried mud brick with straw had 3 times the strength of just a regular mud brick. So that's why they put straw, because it made it a lot stronger. It gave it some bulk. Today, what we do is sometimes they put fiberglass in there now, you know, and we put wire mesh, you know, for cement and stuff like that. As long as the groundwater didn't dissolve the foundation, and the floods didn't reach them, the mud brick tend to last for generations. A modern brick maker can make about 1,000 to 2,000 bricks a day, and we assume that, you know, those back there could do the same thing. A few ancient mud bricks survived, and most of them you can be dated because it has the cartouche of the Pharaoh on there, it's his mark. Not surprising that they didn't have much fuel back then. Very few bricks were dried with a keel or anything. And the way they did this is they had a wide open area, you know, a big field that was flat. And what they had, one guy with a little thing about the size of the paper here, you know, and it was a wooden piece, and it was about 3 inches high. And somebody would come by. What they would do is they would mix the mud, the straw, and the clay in a clay vat, you know. And the guys would carry that to the guy. He would take it, put it in there, level it out, and go to the next one. So everything had to be brought to him. Everything had to be brought to him. That's why it needed a whole bunch of people. They didn't have any wheelbarrows. So everything had to be carried in maybe a pouch or something, you know, or a yoke or something like that. And you might wonder, about all the ancient monuments. Well, the monuments were built to stay. They were made of stone. The houses, they weren't meant to stay. They were made of brick. And now, since The sand and the dirt was black. The brick was black. Now, do you want a black house? A black house is going to be pretty hot. So they painted all the houses white. They painted the bricks white to reflect the sun. And if they had any windows at all, it was on the very top. Okay, now, this process took 25 days of building brick. Okay, how many sides does a brick have? Think about it. Six sides, huh? Think about it. Top, bottom, two sides. What they would do, the first 3 days, the brick would lay just like it was. Just like they made it. After 3 days, they would flip it over. It would go 3 days on that side. Then they would flip it on the side. It would go 3 days there. They would flip it upside down. And then they would go on top and on the bottom. That was 24 days. And on the 25th day, they would pick them up. And it would start all over again. So it was a 25-day process on sunny days. After a time, the elements would, the wind, and if it rained at all, would kind of crumble the bricks, and they would just take them down, and just like they do now, if somebody bricks are breaking, they'll just replace them. Pharaoh's idea was that, therefore, the people cried, "Let us go and sacrifice to our God." Pharaoh's idea was that they wanted to go. He was telling Pharaoh they wanted to go meet God, but Pharaoh was saying they don't want to go meet God, they just want time off. He thought that if he'd wear them down, they would quit asking. Pharaoh made it clear that he wanted as many bricks made as was made before, and he wouldn't furnish the straw. His theory was to keep them wore out so they wouldn't protest. The pleas of Moses and Aaron were said to be vain or false. They were falsely pretending that God commanded them to go and worship, when all they really wanted to do was raise rebellion. So Pharaoh thought that all Aaron and Moses was doing was raising rebellion. He just wanted the people to go against Pharaoh. Here we see that Pharaoh had no regard at all for the feelings of others. He was saying to this that regardless of what you said, he would not let them go. Now the officers of the children, that's in verse 15, that was the three levels we talked about earlier. We talked about the superintendent, the foreman, and the gang leaders. The overseers were cruel as well. They spoke to the people about furnishing their own straw. Now, Pharaoh didn't break this news to the people. He had his foremen break it to the people that from now on you pick up your own straw. And when the people thought it said, they thought it was the foremen doing this and didn't blame it on Pharaoh. As I said before, this caused several extra hours of work about having to pick up the straw. They insisted upon it that they did the same work in the brick kilns and the same number of bricks a day as they had done before. Here we see that they're asking them to do something almost impossible. It ended up in beatings and accusations. These beatings were done by the Hebrews themselves because they were in that level. Said, first level, second level, third level. These beatings were done by the Hebrews themselves, who were actually the overseers under the Egyptians. Even working from sunset to sundown, there was no way that they could make the same amount of brick. Frequent beatings of the workers made things worse. Sore bodies doesn't do much work. The formal labor complaint at the highest level was rejected. See, the Egyptian taskmasters who were sent out to gather straw before, they hindered the work because they required the Israelites to do it. The Egyptians made themselves guilt and will bring down the vengeance of God upon those who are cruel. This was an appeal directly to Pharaoh to require them to do as much as possible. Instead of expressing indignation at the taskmasters and relieve the officers and the people, he insulted them by flaunting sarcastic way that certainly all you want to do is take some time off. Therefore, say to them, let us go and do sacrifice to the Lord. Pharaoh suggested that it was not so much the service to honor God, but they just wanted time off. Go about your business and attend your work, even your officers as well as the people. Work yourselves as well as you see your people work, and do not trouble me with such disrespect. The usual number of bricks was expected and insisted upon delivering the full number. It was a bad situation and circumstances that there was no likelihood that they were going to get out of them. Since Pharaoh treated them in such a bad manner, they saw not only that the common people were in bad condition and great bondage and misery and distress to be obligated to get the straws for their own brick, but that they themselves were in bad situation since the defiance of the people and the beatings caused misery for Aaron and Moses. After it was said, ye shall not miss any of the bricks and do your task work, after this had been said and confirmed by Pharaoh, they had no hope of things getting any better anytime soon. They looked at their unhappy lot as a long-term misery. We see that these Israelite officers got nowhere with Pharaoh. Pharaoh reminded them that this was punishment because of the request of Moses and Aaron, that they wanted to go to the desert to worship. These officers knew that they were in a rough time, and they blamed it on Moses and Aaron because they were also getting beat. The leadership teams eventually drew the lodging of a formal labor complaint and waited outside the royal hall in order to meet Israel's representatives. The meeting was definitely not a cordial one, and nothing really was accomplished. And here in the eyes of Pharaoh literally means that you made us look like stench in the presence of Pharaoh. And Moses is accused of making the people's situation worse. And he thought that he would go in and ask Pharaoh, and Pharaoh would give him what he wanted. But it didn't turn out that way. Here, these overseers really were upset with Moses and Aaron and told them they were trying to get him killed. And Pharaoh and his men were blaming the Hebrew overseers, and the Hebrew overseers were blaming them too. They were caught in the middle, and they were getting beat daily. The Lord reminded Moses of his sovereign and identity and promise, I am the Lord. This is the same Yahweh of the patriarchs and the same Lord of the Abrahamic covenant. But in the events of the Exodus, his name is fully known with succession I will statements. God promised, I will rescue and redeem his people in Egypt. I will make them my people. I will be their God, and I will bring them to the promised land. Whether Moses and his brother forcefully protected them with the foremans about the strong and wrong evaluation reminds them that this point was moot. Rather, the focus was on Moses, who protested with the Lord in prayer. Moses couldn't believe that things just didn't go right the first time. So here he is in prayer, protesting to God. Moses was very disturbed about what he'd heard. Moses was blaming God. He was even brash enough to ask God, why did he even send him? Moses and Aaron had been so confused about all this, they didn't even know how to answer the Hebrew overseers. They probably didn't know what to say. They knew that they said exactly what the Lord told them to, but it hadn't got results that they thought. Many times when we do exactly what God tells us to do, it seems like we failed for a while. Perhaps not all these terrible things happened to the Hebrews. They might be reluctant to leave Egypt. It took a famine to get them in, and it took cruel slavery to get them out. It was a very difficult to figure God out. Here we see a bold Moses who cried out to God, why? Trials come to all believers. We are told they come to make us stronger. God has a purpose for sure. He really doesn't have to share the purpose with us. As Job insisted, in the face of terrible things, these Israelites must stand for what is right. Christians are not expected either, are no exception either. Sometimes we do not understand the hardships we must face either. Only God knows the answer. When the going gets tough, go to God in prayer. And Moses did, as Moses did here. Eventually, Moses did not anticipate what effect Moses' refusal and reaction would have upon his people. Confrontation with Moses had been provoked by both anger, resentment of Israel by the Egyptians, and of Moses and by Israel. This was not an expected scenario. Every minister who's spoken for God throughout all times has felt frustration as Moses did here. He felt that he had been a failure, not only to himself, but to God, as if he was saying that he told me that he would deliver them. Now he hasn't. We are impatient people, and God sees the end and knows how things will be delivered. And God does things on his own time. Is there any questions that you have? I can tell you how to make a mud brick. Well, I got that in some commentaries that I've read about the beatings. It wasn't just the common labor that got beat. If you think of it, if you want to speed up the process, you know, you start at the top, because when I worked at the plants for 30 something years, I know that things start at the top; they don't start at the bottom. And it usually goes downhill pretty quick. What did James say? Remember what James said when he said that? He said they wouldn't have probably stopped. Yeah. Yeah, 3 days back, you know, said. And he thought they just wanted time off. Okay. Anything else? That's the first bell. All right. Pack up your kids and let's go home.